Yeah, I mean, we see Biden in the first month that he came in deporting more Haitians in 1 month than Trump had done during his entire presidency. So the Biden administration has very much been deporting Haitians hundreds at a time per month since it's been established, including, right, sending back unaccompanied minors. At the same time, as you said, the U.S. Embassy in Haiti is closed until 2025 because of security issues, kidnappings, massacres, etc. And Biden now has a parole program, which is really a sort of a cover for a workers program, right, that Haitians can come in for 2 years and work, and they're ending up in Amazon warehouses, on farms in New England. And so you see that there is this hypocrisy in the Biden administration
towards Haiti. Mamira Prosper, we're going to have to leave it there. Assistant Professor at University of California, Irvine, and Monique Kleska, Haitian pro-democracy activist. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we are in the middle of our fall membership drive. Help us meet our $55,000 goal by making a contribution today. KBOO's organic, free-range, and independent programming is only possible with your support. Give now at kboo.fm/give. You can also donate by texting the word KBOO to 44321 or by mailing a check to the station at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, 97214. Our members continue to fertilize community radio every time they give.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on
KBOO
Portland. Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
Well, this is KBOO Portland. We're taking a quick moment to say thank you to some of our recent donors during our membership drive. Thank you to David H., Kristen K., Victor P., Sandra L., and Ellen C. Support the radio station you love with a donation. kboo.fm/give. Now, your KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on this fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News, 75,000 unionized Kaiser Permanente workers are on strike around the country.
A solar eclipse is coming with great viewing on the Oregon coast.
And the Portland Art Museum pivots away from using volunteer docents after 40 years.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 4th, 2023. KBOO is currently in our fall membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. 75,000 Kaiser Permanente health workers with SEIU, including 4,000 in Oregon and Southwest Washington, began a three-day strike today. This is the largest healthcare strike in U.S. history. Kaiser pharmacy workers with UCFW began their own strike on Sunday. The previous four-year contract with the coalition of Kaiser Permanente unions expired at the end of September, and negotiations over a new agreement began in April with little progress made. A central demand for Kaiser to hire at least 10,000 new workers by the end of the year that will help alleviate staff shortages that have caused care to be delayed or denied. Negotiators have also demanded a $25 minimum wage for all Kaiser employees and a 24% increase over the course of a new four-year contract. Kaiser reported nearly $3.3 billion in profits in the first half of 2023. Workers could vote to extend the strike if no progress occurs in their contract negotiations. Kaiser says its hospitals and emergency departments will remain open throughout the strike. Doctors and most nurses are not on strike, but they warn that non-emergency and elective services may be rescheduled. Kaiser is also extending its pharmacy network to community pharmacies while its workers are on strike.
There's going to be a solar eclipse across parts of North America on October 14th, and Oregonians will have a great chance to see it. The eclipse will make a path from Oregon to Texas, and the Oregon coast will be the first place on the continent the eclipse is visible. People across the state will be able to see it. The best viewing will be in a roughly 90-mile-wide band that stretches across the central coast, then through Albany, Eugene, Roseburg, and Medford, as the eclipse moves southeast. Inside that band, the fullest part of the eclipse will last around 4 minutes viewing time, while people outside that part of the state will see the fullest part for just a minute or two. This eclipse will be an annular eclipse, which means there will be a ring of the sun still visible around the shadow of the moon. Experts are reminding the public that the sun will still be strong enough to damage people's eyes and that people shouldn't stare directly at it.
Portland Art Museum has announced they're pivoting away from their docent program. Instead, tours of the museum will be given by paid learning guides recruited from local colleges. The 175 docents were told by email that their services were no longer required. Many were older, retired educators who had been volunteering with the art museum. It's a shift that's going along with the museum's $110 million renovation of the Mark Rothko Pavilion. Across the nation, museums are reckoning with the docent system and how it fails to meet the needs of communities of color. It follows an incident in March when a museum staffer asked a young mother to remove her baby from its traditional basket carrier while she toured an exhibit showcasing a Native American artist. The museum since apologized and changed their backpack policy. Former docents were notified that they could instead join the volunteer program that includes educators, graders, and coat check helpers. Some former docents told Willamette Week that they felt blindsided by the decision, but others say they saw that there was a change coming amidst the pandemic. Connie Bushnell is one of those former docents. She told Willamette Week, quote, "I knew it would cause some stress for people, but I think it's important that everyone feel welcome when they walk in the doors of the museum. Even good change is difficult." End quote.
California Republican Congressman Kevin McCarthy became the first Speaker of the House in U.S. history voted out of office today. It ends a fervent campaign by far-right Republicans against McCarthy since he took office in January. Chief among his rivals has been Florida Representative Matt Gaetz. Gaetz, who until February was under federal investigation for sex trafficking, orchestrated the vote on an obscure motion to vacate. Joining the eight far-right Republicans voting against McCarthy were all 208 Democratic representatives. Their 216 votes to remove the speaker outweighed 208 in support. McCarthy had previously insisted he would not make deals with Democrats to remain in power. He had struggled, however, with building a power base within his own party and famously required 15 rounds of voting over multiple days to assume the speakership. McCarthy's departure leaves the Republican Party with no clear candidate to succeed him. Representative Patrick McHenry of North Carolina, a top ally of the former speaker, assumed the gavel as speaker pro tempore and will serve until a new speaker is chosen. McCarthy has made it clear he will not seek to win back the chair.
Following a 3-year pause, borrowers will begin repaying student loans this month. But the deadline for people in public service to take advantage of new reforms and consolidate their loans is December 31st. Suzanne Potter has more on that story.
Federal student loan payments resume this month after a 3-year pause, but people in public service have until the end of the year to benefit from recent repayment reforms. The Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program will forgive the remainder of your federal student loan after you've worked for a public agency or certain nonprofits for 10 years and made 120 payments. Jessica St. Paul is a physician assistant and an adjunct faculty community college professor in L.A. who helps run student loan clinics for her union, part of the American Federation of Teachers, or AFT.
They can apply for public service loan forgiveness and consolidate their loans to get into an income-driven repayment plan all on the same website, studentaid.gov.
During the Trump administration, the Department of Education rejected 98% of PSLF applications. AFT sued, and now the agency has to review every single application filed since 2007. Reforms under the Biden administration mean people can get credit for the years they've already worked since October 2007, even if their loan was in forbearance and they had stopped making payments. Some of the most favorable terms expire on December 31st. St. Paul attended an AFT student debt clinic in 2018 and discovered she had the wrong repayment plan and faced the reset of her loan payment count to zero. She joined a class action lawsuit against loan servicer Navient that forced major changes to the industry. She says once the feds finally forgave her loans, it gave her the financial freedom to secure her retirement and focus on getting married and starting a family.
This allows freedom for you to be able to live your life. You're doing the work for the community. I can still do that and not have to worry about a $1,200 month payment for the next 25 years. This has changed my life tremendously.
AFT 1521 members have achieved more than $4 million of student loan forgiveness through PSLF since March of last year. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
In a historic move, Representative Kevin McCarthy loses his place as Speaker of the House. LaFonza Butler is sworn in as California's newest senator, and the Supreme Court considers the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. With more on the story, it's Alex Gonzalez with 2023 Talks.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The office of Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant.
Congressman Steve Womack of Arkansas presided over the House when California Republican Kevin McCarthy was pushed out as Speaker, a first in American history. 8 hardline Republicans joined all the Democrats to remove McCarthy. Longtime McCarthy opponent and Florida ultra-conservative Matt Gaetz led the effort. Gaetz says the Speaker had to go for Congress to stop funding the government through continuing resolutions and omnibus spending packages.
Kevin McCarthy has risen to power by collecting special interest money and redistributing that money in exchange for favors.
Close McCarthy ally Patrick McHenry of North Carolina will serve as acting speaker. McCarthy is telling House Republicans he won't run again. Vice President Kamala Harris swore in LaFonza Butler as California's new senator, succeeding the late Dianne Feinstein. Butler will be the first Black lesbian to openly serve in the Senate. She's the current president of Emily's List, which works to elect Democratic women.
We've got to build the power necessary to turn the freedoms that our young daughters deserve over to them in their generation.
California voters will choose a senator again in November, and Butler could run. Former President Donald Trump's no longer rich enough to be in the Forbes 400 wealthiest Americans. Forbes estimates Trump's worth at $2.6 billion, $300 million short of making the list. This comes as Trump faces an ongoing New York civil fraud trial. The Supreme Court is considering if the funding structure of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is constitutional. The agency protects borrowers from predatory lending and gets its budget through the Federal Reserve. Payday lenders are arguing that violates Congress's power to control spending. Mitria Spotzer is with the Center for Responsible Lending.
As long as payday lenders have the ability to supersede our rights, we're going to object.
The State Department is slamming GOP lawmakers for not renewing a popular U.S. global AIDS program. PEPFAR was left out of stopgap funding that just passed. Democratic California Representative Barbara Lee says that puts lives at risk.
There are those who are trying to undermine this effort. It always has been bipartisan.
An Arizona proposal to protect abortion access needs nearly 400,000 voters' signatures by summer to get on the November 2024 ballot. Ellen Gonzalez is president of the Arizona ACLU.
This measure will enshrine abortion as a constitutional right in Arizona, ensuring that anyone who needs abortion care can get it, and that providers are not criminalized for providing health care.
I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
When it comes to the idea of renewable energy projects popping up around them to help reduce harmful emissions, in general, public polling indicates most Americans don't mind them. But experts say that doesn't mean developers will always have an easy path to secure permits. However, certain approaches could make the process easier. Mike Moen has the details in Minnesota.
As more renewable energy projects surface in Minnesota, a new poll suggests most Americans are comfortable with having them around. But as these projects are developed, localized opposition can still be a factor. The Washington Post University of Maryland poll finds 75% of Americans wouldn't take issue with a solar farm being built in their community. There's a similar result for wind farms. Josh Hone, who does consulting work for these projects with the firm Stantec, says it indicates a growing acceptance of what needs to be done to respond to climate change. But he says at the local level, these are land use decisions that can get the attention of the community.
Certainly there's an opportunity, there's a financial incentive to have them, but every project has a trade-off, especially in terms of aesthetics and the idea of community character, which I think is at the heart of a lot of opposition, or at least in terms of the rhetoric.
Hone says local leaders and developers need to be transparent right away about the scope of a project. He suggests this can help overcome backlash that sometimes can be clouded by misinformation. A study this year from Columbia Law School found at least 228 local restrictions across 35 states designed to limit such development. Owen also says stakeholders can do a good job in selling these projects by appealing to landowners and explaining how the incentives prevent surrounding communities from losing their economic base and identity.
There are many communities and many deals being made across the country that are really benefiting individual property owners, farms, to stay in the hands of the families who have had them for generations. And so there's a legacy to that.
He adds a careful approach is especially important right now as more federal support comes on board, potentially spurring development at a quicker pace. The poll found broad backing of these projects among Democrats and Republicans alike, as well as people living in both urban and rural settings. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $55,000 by the end of October. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth interview with Jeremiah Hayden from Street Roots about his latest cover story for the paper. Then I take a trip out to southeastern Oregon with the Oregon Natural Desert Association. At 6 p.m., it's Big Picture Science Radio. Then at 7, the Global Sale. Tonight's weather will be mainly clear with a low of 54. Tomorrow's weather, sunny with a high of 79. Today in history, in 1957, Sputnik 1, the first artificial satellite to orbit Earth, is launched from the Baikonur Cosmodrome. And our quote of the day is from Deborah Lax, the daughter of Henrietta Lax, whose cancer cells unwittingly became the source of the first immortalized human cell line, the eponymous HeLa cell line. Henrietta Lax died today in 1951. Her daughter said, quote, "I don't want to be immortal if it means living forever, because then everybody else just die and get old in front of you. But maybe I'll come back as some HeLa cells like my mother. That way we can do good together out there in the world."
Tuesday night was a historic one in Manitoba, Canada. The new Democratic Party won a majority and appointed the first ever First Nations premier in province history. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. History was made Tuesday night in the Manitoba provincial election. The new Democratic Party won a majority. And as Dan Karpinchuk reports, the province will see its first First Nations premier.
Most news organizations called the elections just before midnight, declaring that the new Democrats would form the next provincial government. For weeks, opinion polls predicted an NDP win, especially in constituencies in the city of Winnipeg. Wab Kanu, the NDP leader, becomes the province's first First Nations premier and second Indigenous premier. Kanu and his party campaigned on a platform of fixing the healthcare system, tackling the affordability crisis, and addressing crime. Here's some of Kanu's victory speech.
I want to say thank you, because at the start of this campaign, our team made a decision. We chose to believe in you. We chose to believe that given the choice, you, the people of Manitoba, would embrace a positive campaign focused on the future, focused on fixing healthcare and making the economy more affordable, and that you would reject the divisive message sent by our opponents.
Kanu is a former host with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. He was first elected in 2016. The following year, he launched a successful bid for the leadership of the New Democratic Party. The leader of the Progressive Conservative Party, Heather Stephenson, conceded defeat and said she had called Kanu to congratulate him. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A conservation group has turned an isolated ranch in north central Washington over to the Colville tribes. Spokane Public Radio's Steve Jackson reports.
The 2,500-acre Antoine Valley Ranch in Okanagan County was purchased by the Western Rivers Land Conservancy. After a fundraising campaign, the organizers have given the entire property to the Colville Confederated Tribes. Western Rivers spokesman Nelson Matthews says Antoine Creek is an important habitat for wild steelhead. The tribe will work to restore the creek flow during fish migration time and revive spawning habitats that have been choked for decades. The ranch controls water rights on the creek via a small dam several miles upstream.
Colville tribes came up with, their fisheries department came up with a unique idea to use the dam to control the timing of that water, so that it could benefit both the migration and the spawning of the threatened steelhead.
A pulse of water would be sent out in the spring. The flow would attract the fish to come up that section of the creek. Later in the year, when the water starts getting low and warm, cool water would be released when the smolts are in the stream to help them survive. The tribe also plans to fence off the creek to keep cattle out and restore the riparian area and the original creek stream bed. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
Healing events are set to begin this weekend through Indigenous Peoples Day in Juneau, Alaska. The events surround the 1963 closure of the Walter Sobolev's Memorial Presbyterian Church to acknowledge the closure and the hurt it caused on the Juneau Indigenous community. On Saturday, a sign will be unveiled at the site of the former church. On Sunday, there will be a church service with an acknowledgement and apology from the Presbyterian Church. Indigenous Peoples Day will include a sharing of history and the presentation of checks and partial payment of reparations. The Native Church, as it was known, served the Native community, including with its Tlingit pastor, Walter Sobolev, who held his first service in 1940. The church was ordered to be closed in 1962. The closure was said to have left Sobolev and the Native community devastated. The acknowledgement, apology, and reparations include $950,000 for the harm and pain the closure caused. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
New research from the CDC finds that Oregon's drug decriminalization law, Measure 110, didn't contribute to an uptick in overdose deaths. KBOO's Doug McVeigh spoke with the lead author of the study to learn more.
New research published September 27th in the journal JAMA Psychiatry finds that decriminalization of possession of some drugs in Oregon and Washington was not responsible for an increase in overdose deaths. I spoke with the lead author of the study, Dr. Spruha Joshi, to find out more.
We were interested in evaluating a sort of two sort of legal changes in drug possession laws in Oregon and Washington. So first in Oregon, we were interested in studying the impact of what we'll call Measure 110. And so Measure 110 went into effect on February 1st of 2021. And we were interested to see what happened with overdoses given this sort of policy implementation. Similarly, in Washington, there was the Blake decision that happened with a Supreme Court decision, the state versus Blake, which went into effect later that same month on February 25th, 2021. And similarly, went to look at overdoses in that to see what happened with overdoses in those states. And the reason why we wanted to look at overdoses in As sort of an outcome of this is that A, the overdose crisis is continuing. Reducing overdoses is a clear public health goal. And removing sort of criminal penalties for drug possession have the potential to reduce overdoses due to potential reduction in sort of the fear of engagement with law enforcement, so potentially increases for calls for help. And then also Measure 110 had a second aspect where it was increasing funds to treatment access from the cannabis tax revenue. And so what we did was we implemented what is known as a synthetic control method to be able to assess sort of what would have happened in each of these states had these legal changes not occurred.
What'd you find?
Yeah. And so what we found was that in both of those states, we found that while we did see an increase in overdose, which parallels what's happening across the country, these increases in overdose were not associated with these policy changes in either of the states.
That was part of my interview with Professor Spruha Joshi, PhD, MPH, lead author of an article published September 27th in the journal JAMA Psychiatry.
That was KBOO's Doug McVeigh.
A new online toolkit from Mental Health America aims to provide information, tips, and resources for young people, caregivers, and school personnel on how to protect the mental health of youth in a digital world. Nadia Ramlagan reports from Kentucky.
Data from last year shows a growing percentage of Kentucky children and teens report struggling with depression or anxiety, largely driven by social media use. A new online toolkit from Mental Health America aims to provide information, tips, and resources for young people, caregivers, and school personnel on how to protect kids' mental health in a digital world. Mental Health America Kentucky's Executive Director Marcy Timmerman says having resources to spot early warning signs can help families get off to a good start this year when many households are adjusting to new patterns and habits.
I think one of the biggest early warning signs, especially related to social media use, is that they suddenly stop wanting to use it or they are on it all the time. There's an extreme change in their behavior and maybe their attitude as well toward the media platform.
The U.S. Preventative Services Task Force now recommends screening for anxiety in children and adolescents ages 8 to 18 years, even if they aren't showing recognized signs or symptoms of anxiety. Over the past decade, feelings of persistent sadness and hopelessness, along with suicidal thoughts and behaviors, increased by about 40% among young people, according to the CDC. Kentucky college student and mental health advocate Hannah Hallen believes traditional approaches to mental health haven't kept up with the needs of her generation.
I feel like they are trying their best with potentially old resources or things that used to work, but with the changes in this generation that are so niche to this era, there are a lot of differences.
In addition to social media, more young people report feeling distressed about mass shootings, climate change, and the growing political divide. This is Nadia Ramlagan for Kentucky News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org. Nadia Ramlagan reporting.
New data reveals an alarming connection between high temperatures and emergency room visits. These data are most troubling for people with Alzheimer's disease who face a higher risk than the general population in heat waves. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more of the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Millions of Americans suffer from Alzheimer's disease, and they may be especially vulnerable when it's hot. Howard Chang is at Emory University Rollins School of Public Health. His team analyzed hospital data from California, Missouri, North Carolina, New Jersey, and New York. They found that when summer temperatures were high for 3 days in a row, people were more likely to visit the emergency department. That was true for those with Alzheimer's and the general population.
But if you look at the degree of impact, we see that the Alzheimer's ED visits showed a much stronger risk, a higher risk associated with temperature. And that is consistent across the five states.
There are several likely explanations.
People with Alzheimer's might have impaired judgment and decisions in terms of things like not keeping hydrated, wearing too much clothing, or even wandering on hot days.
Those with Alzheimer's and related dementias also have higher rates of other conditions, like diabetes and heart disease, that can make them more vulnerable to heat. So as the climate warms, it's important to take extra steps to protect them. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
It's Wednesday, and that means a visit from KBO News poet, KBO News poet Dan Raphael. Tonight, Dan muses about what's normal.
Healthcare workers on strike, Trump on trial, 80 degrees in October, 8 young adults OD snorting fentanyl on the North Park blocks at 10 a.m., and the House of Representatives has no one in charge. It seems abnormal to feel normal. The longer I live, the more resilient and non-judgmental I need to be. I'm waiting for the data clouds, swollen like force-fed goose livers with all our personal information, to burst and paralyze the internet with a tsunami of trivial babble, hopefully lobotomizing corporate AI so it's happy perfecting checkers and celebrity impersonations. To paraphrase Groucho Marx, are you going to believe your own eyes or what the media tells you? If the media can't offer us continuous surprises and outrage, we might go see a friend or take a walk outside. We might join a cause, help improve some people's lives, and make our own news. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to a fall membership drive edition of the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 4th, 2023. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, tips, confidences at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes myself, Dan Raphael, and Doug McVeigh. The producer and engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Suzanne Potter, Mike Moen, Alex Gonzalez, Antonia Gonzalez, Nadia Ramlagan, and our well-climate-connected Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast in this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Reed Johnson.
And I'm Michelle Coppola. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. We are currently in our fall membership drive, so now is a tremendous time to join. Really, we cannot do this without you. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, all you got to do is go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for In Depth and have a great night.